हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाधुनातु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
के 71 अटॉप Okay, we'll start from 70 bottom. Srila Prabhupada adds, Lord Brahma is the first living being who directly learned the Vedic wisdom from the Lord. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye, Srimad Bhagavatam 111. Therefore, who can be a more learned Vedantist than Lord Brahma? He admits that in spite of his perfect knowledge in the Vedas, he was unable to know the glories of the Lord. Right? So it's only by the Lord's mercy. So here's someone who has good intelligence. And someone who has the best of piety. So that means you won't get better than a better material situation than Brahma. Right? And he knows the Vedas. Right? But he himself says that just by this knowledge you can't know the Lord. Right? It's by the Lord's grace. Okay. Thank you.
Like in the restaurants.
Not knowing the load? Oh, that. Since no one can be more than Lord Brahma, how can a so-called Vedantist be perfectly cognizant of the absolute truth? So Brahma can't be, and he's the top Vedantist. How could any other Vedantist be?
Yes.
Right? The so-called Vedantist therefore cannot enter into the existence of the Lord without being trained in the matter of Bhakti Vedanta. Or Vedanta plus Bhakti. Right? Because having that as a basis of knowledge is not enough. Right? It's a grounding. It's something to work with. Just like, let's say, because you have the pots, it's not that that makes you the cook. Right? So now let's say Brahma has the best pots in the universe. Right? So now someone else with a pot less than that, now how he's... And he can't... He has a limit on his cooking. What about the guy with this, the tin can, you know? Right? And he hasn't even taken the top off yet, right? You know, it's still
just
kind of sticking on the side.
Then, just throw it in the fire and then...
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another thing, yeah. Okay. So Vedanta plus Bhakti, so it's a support, just like the pots are support for cooking. But the Vedanta is a support for Bhakti. Yes. It's not that Vedanta is Bhakti. You understand? Vedanta is the truth. But to actually know the truth, you can only know the truth through Bhakti. The Lord only reveals Himself through devotion. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But the facts and figures are all there.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's the thing. It's non-different because he is the Shastra, but at the same time it's different. So he is the Shastra, but it's he himself who reveals who he is through the Shastra. Vedanta means self-realization, and Bhakti means realization of the personality of Godhead to some extent. Right, so the Vedanta will establish you on the spiritual platform, but being on the spiritual platform isn't enough that you actually get established in who's the personality of Godhead. Right? Because that's just existence. But then the activities and the personality themselves, that has to be revealed by the Lord. Though Vedanta will indicate it, but it's still, that's the personal part. That's what the Lord reveals. The impersonal aspect, then you can get some idea. But here it even says, to some extent you can know the personality of Godhead, because he's unlimited. You know, so we only need to know how much matters to us. One could say, no, but I want to know the whole thing. He says, no, you don't want to know the whole thing. And how much does Mother Yashoda want to know?
Not the whole thing.
Does she want to know that he's out dancing with the gopis at night? Definitely not. Right? And neither do the gopis.
Yes.
it works out. You understand? So those qualities of Krishna that are important to you, anything in connection with that, that supports that, that's what you want to know. Right? So therefore, unlimited devotees are there with all their unique perspective on the Lord, right? That unique affection. So those who are like-minded, swajati, they associate together. Right? So it's an eternal principle. It's not just, you know, because of our conditioning, there's the thing of swajati. It's on the spiritual platform of swajati. That reflects here. So in general, swajati means those who worship, you know, the Supreme Lord, right? So that means everybody in the spiritual world, as opposed to who's in the material world. But then there's those who worship in majesty and those who worship in sweetness, right? And then within sweetness, then they have their specific focus, right? And then within that particular rasa, then they have even more of detail of who they're following, what exact duties, this and that. Does that make sense? So that point is there. Why? We could say, no, but this is, you know, you're making groups, you're making a... No, but that's the whole point, is to make groups. How do you have a relationship if there's not a group? Right? If it's just you and God, you know, what's going to happen?
He's going to get bored with your song.
Yeah, you always remember, right? The song, you know, the boy and girl together and the whole ecstasy and whatever it is that they're doing, whether they're dancing or whether they're, you know, in this scene and that, you know, in 1 minute they're in like 50 different places, so you know that, you know, they're having a good time. Whatever it is, how many of those are there? Right? If that's the really good point, there's only one. You know, then the next one has got to be with others. You understand?
Yeah.
So, therefore, just being alone, you and God, yeah, that's great. You know, the moment that the music swells up, you know, like that, they pull back, you know, in Panavision. But then what? Now what do you do for the rest of eternity? You understand?
Yeah.
Therefore, others are there. And so in that group, then you can create that unlimited variety. Right? Because Radha and Krishna are together eternally, but they expand just to create this variety and increase the rasa by having group. Does that make sense? So therefore, there's always, it's natural, this whole modern thing of breakdown groups, this is breaking down by people who don't have a life. Don't have friends, don't have anybody. They try to break it down. It's that simple. Otherwise, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Being in groups, it's natural. And everybody's unique. You know, that's the thing. Everybody's unique, but there shouldn't be a grouping of uniqueness. Everybody should just be the same. You understand how the contradictions... Now, here's the difference. Contradictions in Krishna are harmoniously resolved. These contradictions just create havoc. And there's never been a stable non-Vedic society since time immemorial. There hasn't been one. Right? Are there still people there, you know, painting with their hands on the wall and stuff like that? No. Okay, maybe in nursery school. Okay, yes. But other than that,
still different.
Yeah, slightly different. You know, the hair's gone.
Yes.
So, you know.
Is the technique that they use to keep the groups broken up that we should be individuals?
They'll say that means, yeah, they'll use some platitude. Whichever one the modes of nature
favor at the time. We're not talking about anything spiritual here. It means, of course, if people are on a material platform just getting together, it's getting in the way of the devotional service, you have to be careful of that. But the principle, you can't destroy a principle because you want to affect a particular detail.
Yes.
Very, very common in the modern, uneducated, non-logical, educational system. That's just standard. I want to get something done. I destroy everything to just get that one thing I want. It's called foolish. This is called immature by Jarabharata. Standard. Popular. But useless. Yes.
Prabhupada said he wanted independently thoughtful men, autonomous sinners.
Yes.
It brings a diversity.
Yes, that's the whole point. Because if it's independent, the individual means you have two things. One, the individuals will apply themselves because it's there. Sand, how you say? Possession makes turn sand into gold, right? So now they will use their intelligence that I'm in this part of the world, how to apply specifically for these people. And in that, they will come up with, one, something that will work there. But two, they may come up with a unique idea that can work everywhere else and everyone can benefit from. That's one thing. The second thing, just administratively, if one center goes down, it leaves all the other, 399. But if it's centralized, one goes down, everything is a problem. Like that. So from all angles, economically, politically, intellectually, that's the way to go. But you have to have a particular vision to understand what Prabhupada is talking about. In other words, you have to be successful on a particular level. You have to be successful on a quite a high level to appreciate that. Otherwise, most won't catch it. It's too esoteric. So no one can know the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full, but at least to a certain extent one can know the absolute truth, the Personality of Godhead, by self-surrender in the devotional attitude, right? So therefore the heart and soul. That's why we always say heart and soul. Mm-hmm. Heart is the devotional attitude, soul is the self-surrender. Mm-hmm. Right? Because there's the attitude I have, then there's the surrender of everything that is myself.
Yes.
Right? Because you can have somebody who's quite, very nice and has a good heart, but it's not about to surrender themselves. Mm-hmm. Right? And someone can surrender themselves but not have a good attitude. Right? That's less. So you're working for both. Therefore, both are mentioned. And by nothing else, right? It's not that there's something else. It's not by influence, money, beauty, anything else that it's going to work. Mm-hmm. Right? Age.
Yes.
Like that. Yes.
Then would there be the self-surrender without devotional attitude?
That you may be committed intellectually to the process. You can see it's superior, but either one has no experience in the element of heart. Right? So, in other words, you think it's the whole package, just due to lack of training, one doesn't know. Right? Because one hasn't. In other words, one hasn't really had relationships with people and that, so you don't know they exist. Right? So therefore, the self-surrender is there, and because that you're giving the whole, then naturally the part will come along with it. So by association, by purification, you'll start to see there's people, there's relationships in that, and so it'll develop. Or if you have the devotional attitude, it'll be there, it'll naturally increase until the self is there. So the point is when both of them are necessary. But the devotional process is so perfect, even you start with one or the other, or even just start with some knowledge, but in proper association, if everything will come. Right? Being complete, then it itself maintains itself. Right? Nothing else, nothing generates bhakti other than bhakti.
Hmm? Can we say that the devotional attitude without self-surrender is leaning towards sahaja? And the other is...
You could, depending how extreme it is. But I'm saying is, in other words, one is surrendered as much as one knows. Mm. But as one goes, one finds out there's more that could be surrendered. Yes. You know, it's just like, let's say the person goes to the temple, sits, they're nicely chanting their japa, very absorbed in all that. So you could say is there the devotional attitude, the self-surrender is there, and that's what they see. But then morning program's over, they go home, and then they're, who they are. You know what I'm saying? So they don't notice that part hasn't been surrendered. Yeah. Because to them, Krishna consciousness is, the temple program.
Yeah.
Right? Which is fair enough. It's the most powerful of all the aspects in the life, but still there is these other aspects, right? The Pandavas are famous because they've surrendered everything, so including their occupation, right? So a lot of the Pandavas life is described in their occupational endeavors.
Yes.
Right? So that means they have the whole thing. Well, we'll generally just do this part, and then our occupation and the family side may not be very well connected. But this is connected. So it starts, that's the point of bhakti, it starts anywhere. Right? So that's what you take the yogis or the jnanis, they can start from this other side, the indirect, and then it will develop the direct. Of course, working with the direct back to indirect is more efficient, more powerful. In the Brahma Samhita also it is said, Vedeshu Durlabham, or simply by studying the Veda, one can hardly find out the existence of the personality of Godhead. Because right? People just don't catch it. It's like this. If I say something positive about something, and I say something negative about it, what's my overall opinion?
Negative.
Right. So that's the whole point. So if there's discussion of the personal and the impersonal, right, or the oneness and the difference, I'm just going to catch... The element of just the how you say?
Impersonal.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to catch. So that's it. I'm always going to look at that side of it. I won't catch the personal. Mm-hmm. Because technically in the material world there is no real personal. Personal is that the living entity wants to control and enjoy. That's the personal aspect. Right, but when they go to apply that, naturally what they're applying it through is they're borrowing from generic principles. Right, there is such a thing as a head. There's unlimited heads. We have one of them. Right, there's eyes, unlimited varieties of eyes. We have, eyes. We have unlimited ears. We have. So basically we're working from the impersonal, though we attribute to it the personal aspect. Right? But we're not, because we say, I am this, but I'm not this, right? As we are that, according to the Shastra, okay? Right, so we're spiritual. But the Lord is adurlabham atma bhaktau, very easily available to his devotee, because he reciprocates. If you see him impersonally, he reciprocates in person. You see him devotionally. As a person, he reciprocates that way. So it's very easy for the devotee. Srila Vyasadeva, therefore, was not satisfied simply with compiling the Vedanta Sutras. But over and above this, by the advice of his spiritual master, Narada, he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam in order to understand the real import of Vedanta, right? So in other words, he didn't write it. This is not some fresh literature. This is a compilation of something that already exists and has existed since time immemorial. It's just a matter of revealing it. Yeah. Compiled the Bhagavatam in order to understand the real import of Vedanta. Right, which is personal. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is the absolute medium by which to understand the absolute truth. So that is the topmost medium to understand. You need the medium, but you have to have that medium with association. And by that proper study in that proper association, the Lord being pleased, then it becomes the medium for you understanding the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Because we can say, if I study this, it's only by the Lord's grace. But if we say, so therefore I don't need to study, what's the medium through which you'll get the Krishna will give you the realization? It has to come through something. Right? You do some work, the person appreciates it, they give you a gift. So the gift is the medium of the appreciation. You understand? So everything works through something. Right? So the medium then is Bhagavatam. That's the absolute medium. So those literatures in pursuance of the Bhagavatam, they become supportive of that, or non-different from. And therefore, then we, by reverse engineering, go back into, therefore, from the perspective of the Bhagavatam, see the Vedanta, see the Upanishad, see the Veda. Right? See all the other Puranic literatures. Right? Then, we see everything by the perspective of Vedanta. That's amazing. Yeah? Yeah.
I've heard Sankirtan, this includes preaching, but it includes this dynamic of a speaker and an audience, or a group participation, hearing and chanting, and what you just said reminds me that in that association where there's a desire to hear and to understand the Lord and the qualified speaker, the Lord reveals himself.
Yes, yes, that's the whole point. So that's Sankirtan. It's when devotees cooperate together to perform devotional service, and then everybody gets benefited. Like that. And, you know, individuals may have their specifics, but at the same time, everybody's getting benefit. That's that. Therefore, the whole point of the group. Right? So the central point of the group is the practice of Krishna consciousness, not other things. Therefore, Brahma continues, I surrender unto his feet, which alone can deliver one from the miseries of repeated birth and death. What can others do when the Lord himself is unable to estimate his own limits? So now if God, who's unlimited, can't figure out his own limits, therefore no one else will be able to catch that one. Sorry. The greatest demigods cannot know him. What to speak of lesser demigods? Right? Brahma then admits that the great demigods and sages of the universe, including himself, are covered by Maya. They perceive the cosmos only according to their individual ability, according to their conditioning. So what is there to say about their knowledge of the Supreme Lord in person as he is, who's beyond, right? So they're in Maya, covered by Maya, so they see according to that. Then beyond that, there is Vedanta. And then beyond that, there is the personality of Godhead. Yes?
In the same logic, we can say that we perceive the Lord partially according to what we can perceive. So it's also not that it's not fully understood, but we might say that because of our limitations, we can never understand him, not even fully, but up to the point that we are able to.
But that's in context of which?
In context of this?
Well, because this is talking about the conditioning, and the previous one was talking about the just, you know, proper devotional service with self-surrender.
But they're both
with the study.
But differently.
Yes. But I'm just saying, so this, you're applying this to both? Or?
Yes.
Okay. So, as we discussed before, it's what is required in the relationship. That's how much we do. So that's how much we discuss, how much the acharyas discuss the shastra, is how much is important for us understanding the relationship. That's why nothing is just Yanis, they speculate beyond what's important, into areas that just are not going to be supported, that are not useful. Right? But for devotees, even though it seems very technical, these are all points, you know, because otherwise what are we having here? We're having the conditioned state, in our view, we're having the spiritual state, and then we're having that absolute, you know, or that transcendental state beyond, the personal state. So why discuss these three? Let's say this is an assembly of internal potency, you know, in a natural environment. What would they be discussing? Only one, the third one. Okay, so why are we discussing all three?
Because we're Tathasta.
We're Tathasta, we're the middle one. And why are we discussing the first one?
Because we're facing
because we're here and thinking we're that. Or this, you know? Right? We think we're this, but we're that. But then Krishna is beyond that. Right? So always this neutral state has to be mentioned because it's something that has to be obtained. Right? The soul has to be back to the principle of I am spirit. Has to have that transcendental position. But at the same time, they have to know that beyond that is the natural position to function in. Because the jiva, by their construction, cannot remain in the neutral position. Right? They're too small. So they have to function one side or the other. Maya is not exactly working out, so that means the solution is the other. Is that?
Yeah.
So that's why the aspect will apply to both, but in one it's limiting and it's a problem, the other one does not. It's not a problem. You know, it's just like, let's say you're in the kitchen and the burner under the pot catches on fire. Is there a problem? Okay. Let's say you're in a barn full of hay and the hay catches on fire. Yes. You understand? So it's the situation, it's not the fire. So in other words, the only being able to understand Krishna to some extent is not a problem in the spiritual perspective. Mm-hmm. From the material perspective, then it becomes a problem because, as you say, we're trying to approach that Lord, unlimited Lord, through limited, you know, medium, right? So, or let's say, yeah, it means non-absolute medium. While on the spiritual, we're approaching the unlimited through the medium of spiritual, right? Instead of non-spiritual. Right? So, just as 1 plus 1 is 1, 1 minus 1 is 1, so therefore it's not a problem. If it's absolute, it's perfect. The problem is trying to understand the absolute through the conditioning, through the senses, won't work. You have to get it through the chit potency coming in parampara. You know what I'm saying? It's not that, okay, I have a little blender and if you don't plug it in, it doesn't work. But now I have this huge, gigantic, as big as this building, you know, machine. Therefore, you know, it will work without being plugged in. What is that? Still won't work. So that's the whole thing. No, but I have so much intelligence I can understand. Yeah, but if it's not connected, you cannot understand. Right? The spiritual is independent from material, so unless it's imbued with spiritual, it doesn't have. It's simple. Unless you plug it in, then the electricity permeates the machine. Otherwise, it doesn't. It's not rocket science here. So that's the fun part is, on this level, the most intelligent are actually the most foolish. You know, like that. Yeah.
So, I'm going to try to get this. Hearing has to enter the heart and become practice. And
yes.
You know, that sincerity pleases the Lord and their nature.
That's the devotional attitude and the self-surrender. You can hear it, and if you've heard it from the right source, there's of course benefit. But it's when you try to apply that, when the association increases so that you develop that faith and then take up that association, then want to practice what those devotees are doing, that time it becomes dynamic. That's why it's said, at initiation you're recognized by the Lord, because that means then you are surrendering to the process, right? Because that's official. So that means it's, and we understand it's not about the ritual of the initiation, it's about the attitude that makes the real initiation. So that's why we start that process from the beginning. Then we have we have that connection. Then it's just a matter of formally. Does that make sense? So you always have that balance, that there is the symptoms of the external, but at the same time, it's not about the external. You know? The external is always secondary. Like I think it was one devotee, there is a discussion of whether they're actually a disciple of Prabhupada because they were approved for initiation and everything and all that. It was going to happen, but they didn't sit for the yajna. So are they a disciple or not? You know, because by attitude, that, you understand? Yes, so that's the whole thing. You have these subtleties. It's not the fire yajna that makes the initiation. It's that mutual acceptance. Right? Therefore, the need of the person being present on the planet to be accepted.
It helps.
As a side point.
Just thought you'd mention that.
Yes, just in case. Just
moving on now. Yeah.
They perceive the cosmos only according to their individual ability. So what is there to say about their knowledge of the Supreme Lord in person as he is? Because that's who as he is. Yes. Right, so Bhagavad Gita as he is means about Krishna as a person and that devotional process to connect to him.
Yes.
And then whatever it is from whatever position, the process, the supportive processes that will get you from whatever position you're in to that position. That's what the Gita explains. Therefore, as it is. Let us therefore offer our respectful obeisances under that Supreme Personality of Godhead. He tells Narada, although we chant his glories, he can hardly be known as he is in fullness. 36 to 38. So that means don't worry about it. You make the endeavor, but don't worry that you don't know. There's always something to know. Otherwise, then if you know everything, it gets old also. Remember, we're feminine. Nothing should get old, right? It gets old, loses its taste. So therefore, Krishna being unlimited, there's always more to learn and more to that keeps it fresh.
Yes.
Right? So it's not a bad thing, it's a good thing.
So that's why we chant his glories.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So the mode of ignorance seems to be always old.
Yes.
And mode of passion seems sometimes not old, but most of the time is old.
Yeah.
Then only goodness is always fresh.
Yes.
And the pure goodness is what happens.
That's eternally fresh.
Yeah. Is that correct?
Yes. Because the mode of ignorance, you see when they work like that, everything's just always just like, if somebody does something, yeah, who cares? It's an attitude that somehow or another you're superior because of this. That puts you in the special position. So if you can say that everything everybody else is doing is boring, then somehow that makes you superior. You could look at it from another thing, is that you can't please such a person, so why even bother trying?
Yeah.
But their point is that you should always bother trying so that I can always just say that it's not useful so that I can always feel superior. You know what I'm saying? So in other words,
yeah.
you take the head cheerleader, and if the head cheerleader is on their own with nobody out in the middle of nowhere, is there any specialness to it? It's only because they're surrounded by, what do you call it?
Fans.
Yeah, fans. That therefore, they're always doing something that's never quite up to the standard, so therefore... And even though all of the associates are all useless, you have to keep a few, otherwise then how do you maintain that you're the special one? In a sense, so this is the mode of ignorance. That's why Prabhupada never appreciated anything in that direction. That's why bureaucracy is a problem, because it means how to say no. Bureaucracy means how to officially organize how to say no. Because that's all bureaucrats do, is say no.
No, but then what's the benefit?
Because they don't get the benefit, and it just means work for them. Right? Because any work means you're dealing with individuals, it's a problem. Therefore, no means it's peaceful. Right? So it's this peace or liberation in ignorance. That's our problem. It has to be controlled by leadership. Leadership means people who have relationships are willing to take those risks and go through the difficulties that come with it. The benefit's so great. Right? You eat, you gotta digest it, you feel tired, you gotta go to the toilet, that means you have to have a toilet, that means you gotta pay the water bills, that means you gotta pay plumbers, that takes up space in your house. Therefore, why eat? Do you understand? But people are willing to take the trouble. Why? Because they see the benefit. Bureaucrats don't see the benefit. Do you understand? They're for leadership. They're important to do their job, to say no where you want them to say no, but they can't lead. That's why there's the term leader. Right, it's a different word. Srila Prabhupada sums up the discussion. The conclusion is that one cannot know the Supreme Personality of Godhead fully by any method, but he can be seen and felt partially by the devotional service process of hearing, chanting, etc. So he can be seen and felt partially. So the point is how big are we? Right? So if at least we feel him that much, then that's good enough. We're full. You know, but we're talking about unlimitedly beyond that, because our limit is the standard of Brahman. What happiness you get from being on the Brahman platform, it just matches our size. Right? But then when you add into that the devotion to the Lord, it says it's like an ocean, unlimited ocean, compared to a fraction of a portion of a drop, not even a drop, a fraction of a portion of a drop. Right? That's really small. Right? So that means it goes beyond, unlimitedly beyond our expectations.
Is this nectar of devotion?
Yeah. Sometimes also it says, that's the material world, it comes to reduce the size of a calf's hoof print. That's just shown because you can, if you have a calf's hoof print and there's water in it, do you have any fear of stepping over it? Do you have to stop? Do you have to think? You know? Do you have to, you know, prepare yourself? Or no. So it's that easy. Verses 39 to 46. Brahma describes Mahavishnu. In the last section of this chapter, Brahma speaks of the first two Purusha incarnations and mentions different species of extraordinary beings within creation, himself included, right? He's a species of one, right? In whom the Mahapurusha invests vibhuti, opulence, and other ideal qualities. He warns that such empowered created beings may appear to be supreme, but they are not. Right, so now you've established his position and everyone a relation, but then one might come up with these might be further doubts. So now in context of the main study, now you can relate these, and then it works nicely. Huh.
Those, they are not the divorce. That's about the extraordinary beings?
Yes.
Or about the
No, about the extraordinary beings. Such empower creating beings may appear to be supreme, but they are not. So it's like Brahma. You know, Brahma or, you know, whoever else is. All these other different species of extraordinary beings. He warns that such empower creating beings may appear to be supreme, but they are not. The chapter concludes with Brahma telling Narada that, in the next chapter, he will speak about the Lord's Leela avatars, because Leela Katha is full of relish and purifies the ear of its propensity to listen to the low affairs of souls conditioned by Maya. Brahma retains the narrative of the Lord's avatars in his heart forever. Okay. Brahma narrates how that unborn supreme original personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, first expands as his plenary portion, Mahavishnu, Karanadaksha Vishnu, who then creates this manifested cosmos. The creation takes place in him, and the material substance and manifestations are thus only him, right? Because he is the cause and the effect. He maintains them, but as the cause, he's separate from the effect, though he's both, right? He maintains them for some time and absorbs them again into himself. The personality of Godhead is pure, being freed from all contaminations of material tinges. He is the absolute truth and the embodiment of full and perfect knowledge. He is the embodiment of full and perfect knowledge. That's why it's his form reveals himself. Because how do you know himself? You know by his form. So his form reveals himself. He is all-pervading, without beginning or end, and without rival.
Right? So it's not his all-pervadingness that this reveals himself. It's his form. The great thinkers can know him when completely freed from all material hankerings. Right? So therefore, if you're not relating to the form, then only revelation you'll get is from the impersonal. So that's all the more you can understand. Because that's all you're dealing with. And then sheltered under undisturbed conditions, great thinkers can know him when completely freed from all material hankerings and when sheltered under undisturbed conditions of the senses. Right? So they can only know him when they come to the spiritual platform and then are not exposed to engaging the senses. Otherwise, by untenable arguments, all is distorted. So they have to follow these, but they have to become freed from all material hankerings. How do you do that? It's only by his grace. So then they can follow these paths of jnana to get them to that position that they can get the Lord's grace. But as Arjuna points out, they're much more difficult, right? To sit there and control the mind when all the mind is engaged, the senses, and the senses, all they do is bring in information. How are you supposed to do that? Is that something that means in the position of samadhi, then there's only focus on something internal. But the point is the senses were working up to that point. So how do you come to samadhi, which is where the senses stop working, with the senses working?
By disengaging from the senses.
Yeah, but how do you do that when that's what they do? You technically can't.
Isn't it what yoga describes?
It describes, so they can temporarily do it. But the thing is the trouble it is so great. You know? I mean, it's just like, means you start with what you shouldn't do.
Right.
Is that a problem?
Yes.
You should not do certain things.
Yes.
That's already a problem, and that's the first step. Then there's things you're supposed to do. That's another problem. Okay. Then you're supposed to be able to sit down in one place and, you know, not move for 2 hours and 45 minutes as a minimum, just to show that you can perfect that asana. Now, is that a problem or not?
Yes.
Yeah, so many things to do, right?
Big problem.
Okay. Then you're supposed to control the breathing. Right? So that means to control the breathing means the body already has to be done. That's already a problem. Then you have to stop the breathing. Right? Pranayama people do it just to make the mind peace. So we use it like that also. But it's actually to stop the breathing. Ingoing breath, outgoing breath, stop. So what happens when you stop breathing? It's dead, or it's a bit of a problem. You know what I'm saying? When your older sibling was, you know, stopping your breathing, you know, when you're sitting on your chest and you've harassed them and they've caught you, is it a position of, you know, happiness? No.
I was the older sibling.
Oh, you were the older. It was a position of happiness. Okay.
Fond memories.
Yes, okay. So, we understand that the point is to stopping it. Now, how much trouble is that? So we see as each one goes, it gets more trouble. Right? Then, after that, you stop the breathing, so you're not breathing at all. The internal and external, and you're still alive. Right? Because if you're dead, the process doesn't work so well.
Less than that.
Right? Yes. Yeah, so you have to stop the breathing and be alive. Now, the next thing is to, you know, pull in all the senses that they're not connected with the sense objects. Mm-hmm. So as we see, it gets worse.
But didn't we discuss it? That I think it's Navayogendras. It was mentioned that it's not possible to disengage the senses.
Yeah, so that's the whole... That's the topic we were from the Vedic psychology. So that was four Kumaras with Hamsa avatar. So then they're discussing, but I think that's a discussion, yeah, like you said, Narad Muni was bringing that up. So you can't stop it, so that's why in doing the bringing them in, you have to then focus and then get the meditation. So that's the difficulty, how many people are doing it, how many people are successful. Right? Because you hear about the yogis, but you know, there's a handful of them. How many of them are there? Yeah, so like that. So you see some of the ones, Prabhupada was talking about at Kumbh Mela in 77 when they were going around. And they were going and there was these, you know, very young but very ascetic looking yogis. You know, there'd be like a small group of them. But, you know, they would look very heavy. But at the same time, they were very young looking. So as they walk by, then Prabhupada, you know, you don't stop and gawk or point. But, you know, Prabhupada indicates that they're hundreds of years old. Right? It's because they stop the breathing. They come down for the Kumbh Mela, so they're breathing and take part, but then they'll go back to wherever they are and then stop the breathing again. Right? So if you stop the breathing, you don't get old. Right? Unless, I mean, if you do it the right way. If you do it the wrong way, you get old real fast. So it's a delicate point. Yeah, you understand? So, but they're not, you know, fully stopping the ascent. Otherwise, why are they here? Otherwise, you continue the process until samadhi. So that means, then we'll say, that's difficult. The guy's 300-400 years old. But the point is then what about stopping the senses? That's not happening. Or, yeah, Vrindavani had that one Baba. I think he was like 200 and some odd years old. Lived on the other side of Jamuna. Like that. So, but the point is still they're engaging the senses. So even they can stop the breathing, they can do that, they still to stop the senses. So practically it's impossible. Like that. Yes.
Aside from the yoga process, you know, going to the wrestling mat with your mind is a losing proposition. Because it's too subtle and conditioned to material thoughts. And so Arjuna is already agitated. He doesn't want to fight. And he's having a problem with his mind. And so he's thinking, how can I control that? I mean, aside from the yoga process. I mean, he's hearing the yoga process.
Yes, no, but that's his point, is that yoga process, that's too much, too difficult. Uh-huh. He's thoughtful, so he can see how to apply it, what you have to go through, and then he's able to understand, no, this is not going to work.
Right.
Like when you deal with, you know, somebody who's quite intelligent and thoughtful, then you can explain to them certain things about, you know, spiritual life and material life, and they can see it because they practically go through it and see, yes, oh, that's okay. They know the situation, they know what they're doing, but they didn't look at it that way. And so then they start to look and they can see, yes. You know. So he's thoughtful. That's why he's asking for something else. So the point is that it's not a, because the process is not about stopping the senses, it's about engaging them properly. The senses are supposed to be in contact with sense objects. That's what they do. But they're supposed to be in contact connected to Krishna, not disconnected. That's the process. Okay. He maintains them in the creation for some time and then absorbs them again into himself. The personality of Godhead is pure, being free from all contaminations and material tinges. Like, is this of no interest? What's going to be the... If you have such nice personal interactions, why would you be interested in impersonal? You know, and they don't even know it's impersonal. But someone's dealing in an impersonal way and thinks it's very personal. Right? Someone's impersonal, knows they're impersonal. Okay, you can handle it as far as business goes. And someone's impersonal and thinks they're really personal. That's annoying. Right? So therefore, why will he have... Therefore, he's free from all contamination material tinges. There's nothing to gain there. He is the absolute truth and the embodiment of full and perfect knowledge. He is all-pervading without beginning or end and without rival. The great thinker can know him when completely freed from all material hankerings and when sheltered under undisturbed conditions of the senses. Otherwise, by tenable arguments, all is distorted and the Lord disappears from our sights. Untenable arguments. Yes?
I'm just thinking that it's a conditioning of his soul, of a person. When they get position, they tend to be very impersonal. But for the Lord, he's in position, but he doesn't have fault of impersonality.
Yes. Yeah, no, he doesn't have that. If you relate it that, he can relate like that.
But it's not the natural. The natural position is to relate as a person. You don't want to relate as a person, then he can also do that. Because the concept is from him. We're just part and parcel of him. So we'll only do actually what is the particular common qualities of nature. Right? It means God's all the qualities, unlimited qualities. We have a certain amount of them to a certain degree. So we can only manifest those. So he's unlimitedly independent. We're a little minutely independent. You know, he's personal, we're personal. He's impersonal, we're impersonal. Because the difference is like it means you see kids when they you know, are out in the backyard, small children, and they'll always be doing kind of some kind of like enactment.
Yeah.
Right? The bigger kids, it's they get bored, so they got to find some third party distraction, right? But the smaller kids, it's all that personal. Okay, now you have girls playing boys, the part of the boy, you know, or you know, then they're playing a king or something else. How do they do it?
As a girl.
Yes, but I'm saying when they do it, is it like that in real life, or it's overdone? It's melodramatic.
Yes.
Right. So that's the whole point.
Of the jiva.
Yeah, the jiva cannot actually take the masculine position.
Hmm.
So we do that by melodramatic overdoing, you know. That's why you see, as people move up and they have that thing, if it's on the material platform, they always basically act in the same way. You know what I'm saying? You take a person who's got a job under a boss from any company, from any country, you know, in the world, and they can sit down and have a common discussion about their boss.
Yeah.
Why? Because they just fall into that same category. They do the same things. Like, just like you see, little kids, when they do these things, they all do the same. It doesn't matter the background.
Yeah.
You know? Like that. You have a whole bunch of girls, they can all be from each one from a different country, different social thing, but when they play the masculine role, they'll all do it in the same way. You know, when everybody's the king, they'll all do it in the same way. They puff their chest out, you know, walk around, do the whole thing. They'll all do the same. So that's the modes of nature. So the modes of nature just make one act that way. Therefore, we see uniqueness like Yudhishthir. He's emperor of the world. But unless, you know, Mahabharat told you that, you might not catch it.
Yes.
If you just met Yudhishthir on the road, you might not know he's the emperor of the world, right? Because just his nature is such. You know, the character is such. You know? Like Lord Brahma, probably the four heads would give it away. Right? You know, or Indra, you know, the eyes all over. Now you might look again to, you know, because normally tattoos don't blink, you know. So therefore he's like, wow.
This is something new.
Yeah, this is new. Okay.
Excuse me, Maharaj?
Yes.
But both of them, they have that Ishvarbhava, which was very unpleasant.
Yes.
To Krishna and his associates.
That's just what comes up, because there is the thing to establish, right? In other words, what do they want to do? They want to prove. Does Krishna have to prove?
No.
You know, it's just like, let's say, you know, let's take the cliche. You have the big monster guy, you know, big, huge, strong, and that. And somehow you have the little dinky guy, and he gets upset, right? And so then he wants to fight with him and all that. So he starts swinging. So what does the big guy do? Yeah, just kind of sticks his hand on his head. Well, he's, you know, does the whole thing, right? You know, classic, right? You know. So does the big guy, is he worried? Is he threatened? Well, he's going to bite my ankle off, you know, like that. You know. I like my ankle, you know, it's like that. You know. So the point is he doesn't have to prove anything. That's the difference, is Krishna doesn't have to prove his masculinity. We are desperate to prove it.
Yes.
You know, that's the whole thing. We're trying to prove I'm in control. Right? You know, I can do this.
So that means self-control is the real masculine.
Yes, that whole point, self-control is that's why that principle of brahmacharya and these kind of things are the situations. It's women know the situations that they put the men in or expect them to be in are insane. But the point is men can handle it, so they want to see
how it goes. Yeah,
yeah, because then you know you have a man, right? You know. Yeah. Yes.
Could you say there's like a kind of pure Ishvara Bhav, like Lord Ramachandra would have, like when he was taking care of the citizens, for example? Or?
No, but that's just doing the duties.
Right.
That's just what you're supposed to do. Is that what it's? It's just what you're supposed to do. It means just like if you have a group of people and you're the leader and they're the followers, you have to assert the authority and apply. But you don't have to prove it.
Right, sure.
You know, you don't prove it on their terms. You prove if you have to. If someone doesn't understand, you prove it beyond their terms. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. Like a, let's say it was. Remember once the Mridanga teacher was there, and we brought in this one of the top kirtaniers in Bengal because we wanted to, you know, discuss and go through some things on the bhajans. Certain elements and treatments of tunes, because he was a mridanga player. So he knew what was the correct, but he himself couldn't sing it, so he brought this guy in. And he was top, of the best. So he came in, he had his mridanga player, he had some other like this, and they all got the attitude, because they're the best in Bengal. And they sit down, they start. And the Madanga teacher, they didn't really know who he was. All they knew is that he arranged them to come. And he sat on the side. And he just, took a small pair of these little kartals. These Mandiri kartals. And then they start the whole thing, the Madanga player and the singer. You know, they're good. You know, so it means he doesn't have his attitude with it. You know, you only have to hear. You don't have, you don't have to look at them. Close your eyes if the show's too much. And if you appreciate the show, then hey, it's there. So then they're going along, and then they're doing this whole thing. And the mridanga teacher, he didn't try to, impress upon him this and that, because as far as mridanga goes, he knew more than, anybody of these guys knew. But he just sat on the side and played the kartals according to the technical beats, because they wouldn't be playing our regular 1-2-3 stuff. Because our 1-2-3 works, we use it up to 16 beats. Generally, we work at 8 beats, right? Sometimes 7, like that. We generally don't work beyond that. But these guys are working at 28, 32, 21, like this kind of stuff. And so, in that, then they have all the technical points of what's the actual beat. Then you have the things in between that you count. Then they come out back. There's all these different things that are there to how to count. Because if you're doing, how do you keep? You can do like this if you're playing 1-2-3-4. It works. But when you're doing 32 beats, you have to know where you are. So they have this whole method on how to do that. So he was just very quietly and sitting in the corner playing the kartals like that and doing all the things and all these things like that. They're not doing like that. At one point he notices, and then he figures out, this guy knows. Because it wasn't that he was doing it with attitude, he was just doing it like that's normal, So then afterwards, they were very apologetic because they just dealt with him as just some guy. In a sense, so you don't, the dog barks, you don't show your superiority by getting down and showing more teeth or something. that doesn't. Does that make sense? That doesn't, you don't do like that. You do something that's, beyond. Right. Does that make sense? Yeah, so Ramachandra, they just do, they're leaders, so they just do it. That's the natural position, and that's where everybody follows. Mm-hmm. Like that. So. by untenable arguments, all is distorted. Like, his tenable means it's actually in connection with the Lord. It's in Vedanta as coming in the Parampara. Right? And the Lord disappears from our sight. So if we make up our own thing, then he won't be involved. We follow, in other words, so here's a key point, is we study according to the proper method, then he reveals himself. We study not according to the proper method, then he disappears from our sight. Yes. Yes.
The proper method is according to the Parampara system.
Yes, Parampara.
But even in Parampara system, we can choose.
Yes, but that's the Swajati, the proper method. Like that. It means there's general points, like Prabhupada says, we should read all his books. Right? But then of Acharyas, he mentions certain books. Right? And not all books, just certain books. Right? And so then those are the books, then that's what that parallel course is. You have Prabhupada's works, and then you have the works of the Acharyas. Those are the ones he's recommended. You know, Brahma Samhita, the Sandarbhas, Riya Bhagavatamrita, these kind of things. So in other words, we hear in association, you know, from the Parampara. Then you know, with having that self-surrender and devotional attitude, then it'll work. But if we don't hear in that line and there's no self-surrender and devotional attitude, it won't work.
I think that the group concept starts in the spiritual world, because one of the names of Srimati Radharani is Yukteswari. It means,
yes,
she has her own Yuta,
yeah,
group.
Yeah.
So it's an eternal principle.
No, it's an eternal principle. When you have, it means masculine as independent, just on their own, they're fine. Feminine means it works as a group. The better the group, the better the dynamic. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You know, that's the whole thing. So it works out. Karana Dakshay Vishnu is the first incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and he is the master of eternal time, space, cause and effects, mind, the elements, the false ego, the material ego, excuse me, the modes of nature, the senses, the universal form of the Lord, Gaburdakshay Vishnu, and the subtotal of all living beings, both moving and non-moving. Right, so he's the master of all that. Then he expands to take care of that within the specific universe. Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, the sum total of all living beings, both moving and non-moving. All the demigods... Oh, just thinking, couch potato goes into non-moving.
Yeah, right? Sorry.
All the demigods, as well as other extraordinary beings, both good and bad, may appear to be the form of the Lord or the form of truth, but they are not. They are only a fragment of the transcendental potency of the Lord. So he is everything. Because that's the point. If you take time, space, cause and effects, mind, elements, material ego, modes of nature, senses, the universal form, Garbhodaksha Vishnu, and the sum total of all living beings, what's left? Right, so no one can claim that they are, you know, the form of the absolute truth. They're only a portion of the time. In other words, they fit into the universal form there and are controlled by time, space, cause and effect, the mind, the elements, material, ego, the modes of nature. Okay. So that verses 39 to 45. In his purport to verse 45, Srila Prabhupada explains... Those in the list above, beginning from the name Brahmaji, the first living creature within the universe, down to Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, Narada, and other powerful demigods, men, supermen, sages, rishis, and other lower creatures of extraordinary strength and opulence, including the dead bodies, Satans, evil spirits, jinn, aquatics, birds, and beasts may appear to be the Supreme Lord, but factually none of them is the Supreme Lord. Right? So they've covered everything. Right? That makes sense. So. Every one of them possesses only a fragment of the great potencies of the Supreme Lord. The less intelligent man is surprised to see the wonderful actions of material phenomena.
as the Aborigines are fearful of a great thunderbolt, a great and gigantic banyan tree, or a great lofty mountain in the jungle, right? Or the biggest pebble on earth out in the middle of the desert. In other words, it's big, it's something to appreciate. Right? Right. For such, I heard about it, that some group of explorers were going through the jungle, and somehow or another they happened into the area where these cannibals were. You know, these little dinky cannibal guys, right? You know, there's when they say they bite your kneecap off, they mean it. So somehow or another they caught all them, but they had a camera. You know, a movie camera, and they were filming things, that was their whole thing. So they caught the explorers and ate them. But the camera, because it was different, unique, they didn't know what it was. They actually were keeping it in a nice place and basically respecting it. You know? Like that, because it was different. They couldn't appreciate it. And they didn't, I mean, it was beyond, it was greater than them, the technical and what it could do. So therefore, then, so that's the whole point.
The camera was found and they
told. Yeah, camera was found. I think they made a movie out of it.
It's not a sense.
I was referring to the point about that they're going to just anything that's beyond their understanding. It's French, so it can't be happy or sad.
Isn't it worship in the mood of ignorance?
You don't understand like that. So it's greatness. So that you'll worship something greater than you is natural. You know, or respect. Yeah. Just like when you go to school, the guy that's twice the size of you, you respect him. The bigger brother. The whole thing. For such undeveloped human beings, merely the slight display of the Lord's potency is captivating. Right? So this is for undeveloped. A still more advanced person is captivated by the powers of the demigods and goddesses. Right? So they feel they're superior, but it's the same principle. In other words, what's greater than your position is what you'll be, appreciate. Therefore, those who are simply astonished by the powers of anything in the creation of the Lord, without any factual information of the Lord himself, are known as Shaktas, or worshippers of the great powers. Right? So that puts them on the right platform. So aboriginals and nuclear physicists are technically on the same level.
Yes.
But just one's more sophisticated and one's less, that's all. But their consciousness is the same. The modern scientist is also captivated by the wonderful actions or reactions of natural phenomena, and therefore is also a Shakta. These lower grade persons start the aboriginals. Then you have these other high, like that. But then it's all, so these lower grade persons.
It's very elegant.
Yeah, no, it's so good, isn't it? Gradually rise to become Suryas, worshippers of the sun. Remember you asked about this the other day? Or Ganapatyas, worshippers of the mass of people as Janata, Janardana, or Daridra Narayan. In the form of Ganapati, and then rise to the platform worshipping Lord Shiva in search for the ever-existing soul, and then to the stage of worshipping Lord Vishnu, the super soul, etc. Without any information of Govinda, Lord Krishna, who is the original Lord Vishnu. Okay, so they're doing that, but in all these, what they're talking here, because we're on the material platform, is they're not understanding the original form of the Lord, so therefore they're dealing within the material world. Right? Those who are actual Vaishnavas don't know about the Lord outside, so if they don't know about, and they all know about Govinda, right? Sri Vaishnavas, what's their main deity? He's in Tirupati, and Sri Rama.
Balaji,
right? So, but what do they call him?
Govinda.
So they know about Govinda. Right? So that's the point. It's not that they don't know, it's just that they worship him in reverence like that. So if they don't know, then that means generally they're working on this material platform. Because they only know enough about Lord Vishnu just to get done what they want to get done.
So technically we can say that those people, even though they're progressing in the samsara, they still go in the circle.
They go around the circle, because the point is then they come up to the point and get liberated, and then they're back as grass.
Yes.
You know? Or immovable, you know, like stones or things like that. In other words, it's impersonal, so you end up as grass or, you know, a rock or something. Okay. In other ways, some are worshippers of race, nationality, birds, beasts, evil spirits, satans, etc. The general... It's funny is that they basically pronounce it in its original, but they don't spell it in its original. Because they say, and the local is Sai, A-I, so it's Saitan, it's actually the name, and then in English comes out Satan.
What is Saitan?
Saitan, just really nasty.
Oh.
Really bad. You know. They just, you know, they go out of their way to give up his trouble.
Okay.
Evil spirits means that they're, you know, they're on the subtle platform. Saitans are not. They have a gross body. Jinns, those are really big evil spirits. They're the ones with chicken feet. You see falling stars? You see one hit the ground? That's a jinn.
Dead? Or alive?
They're alive. Like that. The dead ones, those are your zombies and stuff. They're out there. The general worship of Shani Deva, the Lord of Distressful Condition, and Shitala Devi, the goddess of smallpox, is also common to the mass of people. And there are many foolish men who worship the mass of people or the poor class of men. So, different persons, societies and communities, etc., worship some of the potent manifestations of the Lord, wrongly accepting the powerful object as God. Because right, that's the whole thing. Who needs God? You know, the people are suffering, so where is God? The people are my God. You know, like this. It's a standard, real standard stuff. But in this verse, it is advised by Brahmaji that none of them is the Supreme Lord. They are only borrowed plumes from the original Almighty Lord Sri Krishna. When the Lord advises in Bhagavad Gita to worship Him alone, it is to be understood that worshipping Lord Krishna includes worshipping all that is mentioned, because He, Lord Krishna, includes everyone. This borrowed plume means it's not even theirs. It's not that He's given it to them and it's theirs. You know, Indra's king of heaven and it's His. No, He'll be there for a while and then it goes, moves on to the next one. So it's borrowed. When the Lord is described as formless in the Vedic literatures, it is to be understood that all these forms mentioned above within the experience of universal knowledge are different exhibitions of the Lord's transcendental potencies only. And none of them factually represents the transcendental form of the Lord. But when the Lord actually descends on earth or anywhere within the universe, the less intelligent class of men also mistakes Him to be one of them. That's the problem. They think people here are God, but they think God is just an ordinary person.
Yes. Good?
Yeah. And thus they imagine the transcendence to be formless or impersonal. Right? So somehow the people here can be God, but at the same time as God, you know, is impersonal. But it doesn't make sense. You can see there's some mundane logic going on here, or lack of it, one or the other. Factually, the Lord is not formless, nor does He belong to any of the multi-forms experienced within the universal forms. One should try to know the truth about the Lord by following the instructions of Brahmaji. Brahmadeva announces His desire to narrate the pastimes of the Leela avatars, footnote 42.
According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Brahma says, the Purusha Avatar has been described, but this topic is predominantly concerning Maya Shakti. Now the Leela Avatars, who are composed of the Chit Shakti, are described. Right? Because if you're talking about the Purusha Avatars, the point of the Purusha Avatars is they're coming and manifesting the universe and maintaining it and destroying it. So basically, the prominence is about the material energy. That's why it has a taste, because it's the Lord's pastime, but there'll be more taste in discussing the Leela Avatars, which then the predominance is the who are composed, not composed of the Chit Shakti.
Yes.
Right? So the reason we're discussing is because the Lord is connected with the creation, because Vishnu is connected. So we see is the aspects of Brahma and Shiva, we don't discuss that much. Right? They're only discussed in using the connection with Vishnu. He ends this chapter by glorifying the process of hearing about these incarnations. Quote, hearing of their activities counteracts all foul matters accumulated in the ear. These pastimes are pleasing to hear and are to be relished. Therefore they are in my heart. 46. Srila Prabhupada concludes his purpose to chapter 6 by glorifying the purifying power of listening to Srimad Bhagavatam. Less intelligent persons take more interest in the creative forces of the Lord in the material world, and being disconnected from their relationship with the Lord, they put forward many theories of the creation in the name of scientific research. Right? So, in other words, the creative forces are more important than the person himself. Just like, like we discussed about like the Arctic. Well, why the Arctic? Why that? Rather than, you know, if we just say that these items please Krishna, then, you know, there's to know, but why those? You know, then you have to get into the tantric explanations of this is the fire, this is this, you understand? So once we bring it down to the creation, then we can say, yes, now I can relate to it. That's where less intelligent comes in. So by now seeing it in relationship to the person, that's when one becomes more intelligent, you know, most intelligent, right? So that's done by the connection, relationship with the Lord. The devotees of the Lord, however, know well how the creative forces work concurrently by the action and reaction of the material energy of the Lord. So the material energy is working under the direction of the spiritual energy. Therefore, they take more interest in the transcendental activities of the Lord as he incarnates himself on the surface of the material world. Right? Rather than the material world, it's his incarnations. Srimad Bhagavatam is a history of such activities of the Lord. And people who take interest in hearing Srimad Bhagavatam clear their hearts of accumulated mundane filth. There are 1,001 rash literatures on the market, but one who has taken interest in the Srimad Bhagavatam loses all interest in such filthy literatures. Sri Brahmaji is thus attempting to narrate the principal incarnations of the Lord so that they may be drunk by Narada as transcendental nectar. The philosophy at heart of chapter 6. Great sages who speak of ordinary schools, ordinary scholars, have since time immemorial disputed as to whether the Supreme Absolute Truth presented in the Vedic scriptures has form or is formless. Both sides of the dispute, the personalists versus the impersonalists, arm themselves with Shastra quotations that seem to validate their standpoints. In his purport to verse 10, Srila Prabhupada makes crystal clear the conclusion of the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya about the issue. On the contrary, the perfect description of the Lord holds that he is both impersonal and personal simultaneously. The personality of Godhead is the original feature of the Lord, and his impersonal emanation is but the reflection of his transcendental body. Those who are fortunate enough to have a view of the Lord from the front can realize his personal feature. Whereas those who are frustrated are thus kept on the ignorant side of the Lord, or in other words, those who have the view of the Lord from the back realize him in his impersonal feature. Interesting, those who are frustrated. So those who have more of an idyllic concept, then it's more easy to appreciate the Lord as a person. Like those who are so-called practical and realistic and, you know, in the world, who are frustrated, they have a tendency towards the impersonal. Therefore, any social thing, people are nice, get together, oh, that's all a waste of time. Everything's all, it's all about being impersonal. So, interesting. Like that. And, yeah. And they'll be the ones that'll break down the culture that encourages the personal aspect. And just make everything all one. Right? So in the name of individuality, they make everybody the same. Because you have to be the same kind of individual, otherwise then you're weird. Right?
Fascinating.
The Virat Purush described in this chapter is not the original transcendental form of Godhead, but all features displayed in that Virat are indeed exhibitions of the Supreme's transcendental potency that are displayed by him within the experience of universal knowledge. It is important to catch an essential point that Srila Prabhupada makes in this purport and elsewhere. The personality of Godhead is the original feature of the Lord, and his impersonal emanation is but the reflection of his transcendental body. Hence, even the impersonal feature of the Absolute is not without form. Right? That's what we're saying. There's no such thing as nirguna Brahman. It's saguna. It's with qualities, and those qualities are emanating from the form of the Lord. Right? They're all connected with the form of the Lord, his pastimes, his interaction. So that means even the impersonal, being a reflection, actually has the personal element. But why we call it impersonal is because it's generic. You know, greatness is generic. Then when you put a form to it, then it becomes specific, personal. Does that make sense? But it's the personal that you get the generic. So that means the generic must contain that element of personal. Otherwise, how is it connected? Srila Prabhupada remarks, he is never a formless void. Earlier in the same purport, the Virat Purush is the impersonal feature of Godhead. In Vyakta, or material manifestation, it's Avyakta, unmanifest state, which the Mayavadis wrongly conclude is the original transcendental Brahman, is simply the same Virat in potential. Right? In other words, you have it means you have the grosser form, right, of Virat, and then you have the subtler form of Hiranyagarbha. Right? So all they're thinking is the Hiranyagarbha aspect is because what's the Hiranyagarbha aspect?
Creative potency.
That creative potency, but what's the principle of it? Remember? Enjoyment. Oh. Right? In other words, why have something unless you're going to enjoy from it? So the point is that I want to enjoy. Let's say I want to enjoy food. Then what do?
Cook.
Right? I arrange food. Right? You know, I want to enjoy in somebody's company. So what do? I arrange to meet them. You understand? So that's the first. So what the Brahmavadis have done, or the Mayavadis, then they projected back from the Virat root back into Hiranyagarbha.
Yes.
And so therefore, when you get to that supreme position, what are you going to get from it?
Bliss.
So Brahmananda. You understand? So their whole drive is because of the happiness they'll get.
Mm.
Right, so they only go to the subtle form of the Virat Purush. Right, they give up the gross form, you know, which for us is subtle, but because they're jnanis, for them that is kind of their world. So they give that up in pursuance of the Brahman, but it's actually Brahman as Hiranyagarbha, because Brahman is personal. So it's simply they've dropped it. It's generic because Hiranyagarbha, the desire to enjoy, it's not specific. If it's specific, the Lord desires to taste, then that means there must be tongue. And then that means all the variety, then that empowers all the varieties of tongues that are there. Then you must have taste itself. Right? And then there must be things to taste. So just that right there, you basically generated 1/5 of the creation.
right? And then when you want to hear, then the next fifth, the next, like this, until all five senses, and so therefore. Does that make sense? And then the mind simply organizes that. The intelligence works out which is the one to go with at the moment. And the ego just makes sure that it, you know, matches your, you know, how you say it, your social status. You know. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Okay. The Virat Purusha is the impersonal feature of the Godhead in Vyakta, or material manifestations. It's Avyakta, unmanifestation, which the Mayavadis wrongly conclude is the original transcendental Brahman, is simply the same Virat in potential. Right? Yes. So that means Hiranyagarbha is in potential, yes. Then there's the Virat in, you know, the gross manifestation, which then will manifest. So depending upon, you know, they're taking it back one.
Yes.
So whether it's from the gross back to there, you know, and then it's all, everything's there, but then, yeah. Since a cloud in the sky is no less than a visible body of fine water droplets suspended in the atmosphere, how can a cloud be anything else than the potential for rain? Potential means that the transcendental potency evident in his reflected feature within universal knowledge remains a reality, whether or not it is perceived by our mundane senses during the night of Brahma. When the outward features of the Virat are withdrawn into the stem of the Garbhodak lotus, or after Brahma's death in the period of Mahapralaya, dissolution of all the universes into the body of Mahavishnu, that potency is conserved by the Lord. It is hidden, never destroyed, and re-manifest in due course, therefore Brahman. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The Virat's continued existence cannot be reduced to zero by mental speculation, because it's always going to be there, whether it's manifest or unmanifest. Even though Shastra admits that the Virat, quote, exists in mental speculation only, end quote, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.5.29 purport, there is still no doubt, objectively, to its existence. Right? In other words, you're speculating. What is the speculation? Speculation is not on its connection to the Lord, or speculation means you're speculating on, because only so many things are described.
Yes.
Right? But then, after that, you apply it to everything else. That's the speculative process. Now you see it not in connection with the Lord, we'll continue that as speculation. So basically useless, right? You know, better than probably something else, you know. But the devotee will see it in connection with the Lord, so it'll help him understanding of the Lord. So then it's not called speculation. Right? Then it's contemplation. Even though Shastra admits that the Virat... Okay, wait, we just did that. Lord Vishnu makes the Virat manifest in the external world and unmanifest within his heart, mind. Just as when we are awake, we perceive the world around us via the external jnanindriyas. But in sleep, we perceive the world inside us, in our minds. The location of the mind being the heart. Right? That was also a question the other day. At different time of night, our hearts play host to dreams, swapna, and dreamless slumber, Shushupti. Because the Virat is first conceived in the macrocosmic mind of the Lord, Brahmadeva and other Paramatma realized saints and sages are able to perceive it within their microcosmic hearts and minds of mystic yoga. Because it's conceived of in the Lord's heart, those who are self-realized, they can realize it within their own heart. Right? Because the point is our heart is simply a reflection of Krishna, expansion of that. It's just a small portion. Yes.
But still we say Virat is real.
Yes.
It's not the speculation or conception.
Is your mind real?
Yes.
Okay, but is it necessary that what's in your mind is manifest or not? Right? It's just like, let's say, you conceive of dinner.
It doesn't work.
Do we see it?
Mm-hmm.
No, but in time it will be seen. So that means, why can we see it? Why will it be real unless it started from real?
Because
So in other words, subtle real turns into gross real.
My point was that when previously we discussed the Virat, we said that when the Lord, the hairs on his body...
Yes, because you're saying that it is the body of the Lord in that way.
That
is a material comparison just to give some place to start from. You know what I'm saying? That's all. It's a place to start from, but that's not the actual point. The real point is that these are where the potencies come from. The testimony of Brahma is defined as Shruti. Srila Prabhupada Morning Walk, Nellore, 6th January 1975. Hence, the description of the Virat Purush in this chapter is to be accepted by us as authentic, objective, and scientific Vedic knowledge. Right? So, Brahma's response, therefore, Purusha Shruti is confirmed because it's already there. And now Brahma, by his understanding, is also then confirming that. And what he says is authentic, objective, and scientific. Very good. Okay. We have another volume. This one's better than that.
Yeah. Last one.
Actually, that's long. Okay. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Study Guide, Part 3, The Cosmic Manifestation, Chapters 7 to 10. Okay, so then, Chapter 7, Schedule Incarnations with Specific Functions. Chapter 8, Questions by Maharaj Parikit. Chapter 9, Answers by Citing the Lord's Version. Right, so that's the Lord's version. There's the Chaturshloki, and then 10, Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. Okay, so we're not saying that as sentiment because it's our book. That's why we're going through it scientifically. We're showing that this is the way it is. It answers everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Chapter 7. Scheduled incarnations with specific functions. Pratigya. All incarnations of the Lord always declare the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be the ultimate truth. Okay. So that's always the thing. We don't have an incarnation where they state that the Brahman is the Supreme. Right? So Shastra may talk about the personal and impersonal, but the incarnations never talk about the impersonal as Supreme. The Pratigya, solemn statement of the purpose of this chapter, entitled Schedule Incarnations with Specific Functions, is taken from Srila Prabhupada's purport in verse 3. His divine grace very concisely explains the avatars of the Lord. As he notes in various purports, this chapter itself is a concise account of the incarnations that will be expanded in later cantos. When the Lord descends personally or by his personal plenary expansions, such incarnations are called Amsa. Kala, Guna, Yuga, and Manvantara. Manvantara incarnations. And when the Lord's associates descend by the order of the Lord, such incarnations are called Shakyavesha incarnations. But in all cases, all the incarnations are supported by the invulnerable statements of the authorized scriptures, and not by any imagination of some self-interested propagandist. Such incarnations of the Lord in either of the above categories always declare the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be the ultimate truth. The impersonal conception of the Supreme Truth is just a process of negation of the form of the Lord from the mundane conception of the Supreme Truth. Right. So all they're trying to do is get rid of everything here that this is not supreme, and then you'll end up just with Brahma. Right? Fine. But that doesn't mean you've reached the supreme absolute truth. You've reached the supreme, but that supreme is based on the personality of Godhead.
We go further.
Right? So therefore you go further. So the Lord is not just Brahman. Right? The personal is also features also there. So both of them. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the seventh chapter, the avatars, starting with Varaha, along with their activities, vibhutis, and their devotees, are described in summary. Okay. Brahmadev speaks to Narada, the glorious of 19 of the Lord's lila avatars. Varaha, Suyagya, Kapila, Dattatreya, Datta, the son of Atri, the four sanas, Sanaka, Sanakumara, Sananda, and Sanatana, the twin forms of Narayana and Nara, Prishnigarbha, Maharaj Prithu, Rishabdev, Hayagriva, the fish incarnation, the tortoise incarnation, Nrsingadev, the savior of Ganesh, Vamanadev, what did I say? Ganesh. Yes, Gajendra. Savior of Gajendra. True. Yeah, because the savior of Ganesh would be Nrsimha, and the savior of Gajendra is Prishnigarbha. Vamanadev, Hamsavatara, Manu, Danvantari, Parasuram. In addition, he glorifies Lord Ramachandra and Lord Sri Krishna. Both Ramachandra and Krishnachandra are Purna Bhagavan. But Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Srila Vyasadeva, Buddha, and the future Kalki avatar. He then makes clear that he himself, Brahma, as well as Vishnu, the Prajapatis, Mahadeva, Shiva, and the demigods, etc., all different representative manifestations of the energy of the supremely powerful Lord. The creation, maintenance, and destruction of the cosmos are conducted by his incarnations and his potencies. No one can claim to know him in full, though some, like Sri Prahlad Maharaj, Mahadev, Shiva, Swayambhuva Manu, and others, according to each one's capacity for transcendental realization, do possess factual knowledge of the personality of Godhead. Right? They have factual knowledge, but it's not that they know everything about him, but what they know, that's solid. So it's in other words, the Mahajanas. Even a sinful person is purified and blessed with the Lord's personal revelation if he surrenders unto his lotus feet. Such surrender that yields admittance into the kingdom of Godhead is real liberation. It is in his transcendental realm there is no need of difficult sacrifices, as karma yogis perform here. There is no struggle to clear consciousness by artificial means, as jnanis and yogis undertake here. Without the Lord, there are no other causes of the phenomenal and nominal existences. Yeah, so it all goes back to the Lord. Brahma tells Narada that the Supreme Lord taught him a concentrated lesson in Bhagavat Tattva science. Now Brahma desires to hand this teaching down to Narada. He requests that the highly advanced Devarshi expand this teaching far and wide. This chapter concludes with a verse spoken by Brahma about the proper mood in which Bhagavad Bhakti is to be undertaken. Right? So then, so he's going to talk about this and now say, I'm going to get down to the essence. So that'll be the chapter Shloki. So in between, Purkit Maharaj asks some questions. Then Brahma continues and explains. Okay. Shloka Anusharana, summary verses. Verses 1 to 38, Brahma describes the Leela avatars. Verses 39 to 50, Lord Hari is the cause of all causes. Verses 51 to 53, Lord Brahma's request to Narad Muni. Verses 1 to 38, Brahma describes the Leela avatars. Brahmadev describes the glories of 19 of the Lord's Leela avatars. In addition, he glorifies Lord Ramachandra, Lord Sri Krishna, the original personality of Godhead, Srila Vyasadeva, Buddha, and the future Kalki avatars. Which?
Buddha and Kalki.
I think because they're within Kali Yuga and all the other ones that are described there before. Because you're coming, you have all of them, then you have Krishna, and then you have the Kali Yuga. Just because how the appearance, how it worked out this time. Hmm. And other times, you know, the Lord is appearing before, and so then you won't have Swayam coming, so then you just would naturally just come down through. But here you have Swayam Krishna, so those, all those other avatars, then there's him, and then there's these concluding in Kali Yuga. Okay. The first Leela avatar that Brahma glorifies is Varaha. When the unlimitedly powerful Lord assumed the form of a boar as a pastime, just to lift the planet Earth, which was drowned in the great ocean of the universe called the Garbhodaka, the first demon, Hiranyaksha, appeared, and the Lord pierced him with his tusk. 1. This incarnation is Tanum Shakala Yajna Mayim Ananta, appearing with a body of identical auspice to unlimited Vedic yajnas performed in total fullness. Yet that body resembles a tusked boar, so therefore he's known as Yajna Varaha, because he is the personification of yajna. Like that. Which is the fun part. Point is, it's fun part, but he's taking the form of a boar. Right? You know, pigs don't run into your sacrifice. Right? You know, pigs aren't involved in your sacrifice. Right? They're just not part of the scene. But here the Lord is in the form of a boar. So that's the fun.
Is there some history before that? How?
That I don't know. You have to ask our missing Polsky.
Yes, so, from the different Puranas.
Yes. Yet that body resembles a tusked boar. In material conception, this is an animal despicably unclean and dangerously savage. Right, because we're not talking about, you know, backyard boar. We're talking about these wild ones. A so-called intellectual lacking a spiritual brain may dismiss the Bhagavad description of this Leela avatar as an exercise in zoomorphism, the extrapolation of divine forms from the bodies of common beasts. In fact, the forms of all gross bodies in the universe are derived from the original transcendental forms exhibited by the Lord in his different pastimes. The form of Lord Varaha is perfectly suited for the twofold challenge of the demon Hiranyaksha. First, Varahadev's mission was to lift the earth out of the Garbhodak ocean, where the demon Hiranyaksha threw it. Secondly, for halting further depredations, the miscreant had to be dispatched to the next world. With his tusk, the Lord overcame the first challenge. The second challenge is met with the primeval, yet eternal wild boar. When the primeval, yet eternal wild boar struck the victory blow, killing the demon. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, since the beginning of creation, the demons and the demigods, or the Vaishnavas, are always the two classes of living beings to dominate the planets of the universes. Lord Brahma is the first demigod, and Hiranyaksha is the first demon in this universe. Only under certain conditions do the planets float as weightless balls in the air, and as soon as these conditions are disturbed, the planets may fall down in the Garbhodak Ocean, which covers half the universe. The other half is the spherical dome within which the innumerable planetary systems exist, right? So here, innumerable planetary systems, right? Because you have the main categories of planetary systems, right? The 3 or the 14. But then within that, you have each one has so many. So we're talking about a lot here. We can say, well, how can it be so many? How many ants are there? Right? There's a lot, you know, or worms, right? Now we talk about here, but I think there's more surface of the earth is underwater than is above water. Right? So the worms under there are more than basically, I think, everything else put together. If you took all other life forms and put them on one side, and you took the worms underneath the ocean and put them on the other side, they'd be heavier. Right? Yeah, a lot of worms. They're hence can of worms. Yes. Yes, the material world. Okay. Floating of the planets in the weightless air is due to their inner constitution of the globes, and the modernized drilling of the earth to exploit oil from within is a sort of disturbance by the modern demons and can result in a greatly harmful reaction to the floating condition of the earth.
A similar disturbance was created formerly by the demons headed by Hiranyaksha, the great exploiter of the gold rush. And the earth was detached from weightless condition and fell down into the Garbhodak ocean. The Lord is maintainer of the whole creation of the material world, therefore assumed the gigantic form of a boar with a proportionate snout and picked up the earth from within the water of Garbhodak. Srila Jayadeva Goswami, the great Vaishnava poet, sang as follows. O Keshava, O Supreme Lord, who have assumed the form of a boar, O Lord, the planet Earth rested on your tusk, and it appeared like the moon engraved with spots. Such is the symptom of an incarnation of the Lord. The incarnation of the Lord is not the concocted idea of fanciful men, who create an incarnation out of imagination. The incarnation of the Lord appears under certain extraordinary circumstances, like the above-mentioned occasion. And the incarnation performs a task which is not even imaginable by the tiny brain of mankind. The modern creators of many cheap incarnations may take note of the factual incarnation of God as the gigantic boar with the suitable snout to carry the planet Earth. When the Lord appeared to pick up the Earth, a demon of the name Hiranyaksha tried to create a disturbance in the methodical functions of the Lord, and therefore he was killed by being pierced by the Lord's tusk. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the demon Hiranyaksha was killed by the hand of the Lord. Therefore, this version is that after being killed by the hand of the Lord, the demon was pierced by the tusk. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms this version. Because both are mentioned, right? So he killed him with his hand and then pierced him with his tusk, right? You throw the guy over the balcony, and then you shoot him. Right? It's just, it adds to the flavor. Right?
There's also a description of two Varahas combined. In
that's fair. But the point is this. It's
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura